You ready for some coffee, honey?
Absolutely.
I'll pour.
Great coffee. I'm Dr. Ron Martinelli.
And I'm Linda Martinelli.
And we are talking
while married.
Well, that was a long day of work today.
It was a long day.
And we're back at the RV again. We're back in the park. And my God, there's a billion people here.
Yeah, what happened from when we left to when we came back? Everybody has arrived.
I was walking the dog and I'm seeing all these gigantic tables and pop-up tents and everything over here in the park. And I asked one of the ladies that was there, I go, what is going on? Because everybody seems to be wearing the same kind of colored t-shirt with some writing. And she goes, we're having a family get-together. And I says, well, how many people are in the family? She said, 350.
Wow. I can't even imagine having a family that size.
Yeah, but you know what? It smells good because everybody's doing barbecue. Yeah. Except it's driving the dog nuts.
They're not inviting us. I know.
Well, anyway. And then, you know, I really enjoyed having dinner with two of our oldest friends last night.
Yes.
And, you know, we haven't seen them for, you know, a little bit of time. And it was just so nice because we've done so much international traveling with them. And it was so great to, you know, catch up and, you know, make new plans and, you know, do a few things like that. I just love that couple.
Yep. That's Bob and Perry. And they're two of the best people on earth.
You know, and they're a little bit older than us, but I'll tell you what, they sure are younger than us. I don't know any other two people that are as young at heart. And, I mean, for their ages, physically in shape as they are, you know, Bob, we've mentioned Bob before on in our discussions,
right.
He's an underwater photographer. And I mean, he just travels all over the world and does beautiful pictures for dive magazines. And, Perry, the big scuba diver, in her own right. And as a matter of fact, I got my scuba diving training with them and broke in as a scuba diver with them. So it was just so wonderful to see them again.
It was really, really wonderful. I enjoyed the day immensely.
Well, you know what? I've got some good news, okay? Good news about our labor growth, employment growth, good news about our President Trump. And the Bureau of Labor Statistics just this week released its May employment report, and they showed we gained in May 223,000 jobs. Isn't that wonderful?
That's a lot of jobs, and from what I understand, we are at the lowest unemployment in many, many years, the lowest unemployment for women, the lowest unemployment for blacks, the lowest unemployment for Hispanics, and really just the lowest unemployment for everybody in many, many years.
And you know, manufacturing jobs are up. And the Bureau of Labor Statistics said that since January of this year, we have gained on average 207,000 jobs.
Wow.
Okay. So unemployment is down. Manufacturing jobs are up. The economy's up. So just thanks to President Trump and his administration and everybody and the CEOs of these corporations and small business that contributed to this growth where we can get Americans employed.
And one of the reasons that has happened is with the tax breaks that President Trump put into place, corporations actually did what Democrats said that they wouldn't do, and they did go out and hire more people. And by the way, Costco just today announced that they were giving their new bottom rate is going to be $14 an hour instead of $13 an hour. So everybody's going to get a raise that was at $13, and everybody coming in the company will have a higher wage than they did. So that's good news too. And all of these trickle down things that we were told would not happen absolutely are happening. But all that's being said right now by Nancy Pelosi is that this is crumbs, and also that
The employment figures don't matter.
The employment figures don't matter, and good jobs don't matter is what she said.
Well,
and good jobs absolutely matter. And by the way, I am one of those companies that have hired more people since the tax breaks have been given.
And my company hired a new employee this year as well. Right. So, and you know, we got our new ETC forensic company that's coming online, and we're going to be hiring two or three people for that. And we certainly have hired some part-timers for that in our tech, you know, area.
Yes.
You know.
Yes.
So I think that's wonderful. And, you know, I would do want to, you know, you mentioned Costco, and I want to give a shout out to Costco because what a great business model they are.
They are.
And mm-hmm. both of our companies have corporate memberships to Costco, so we're certainly big supporters. But what I love about the employees at Costco is they're always so personable. And if you ask them anything, they always try to help you. And so it's just really great customer service. You know, we've had to take something back every once in a while. And, you know, they make those lines go by fast. And they take care of business right away. They never ask you any questions. And they just, I mean, I just love that business model. Just to be able to go in and know I'm not going to have to argue with someone when I have a product that didn't work the way it was supposed to work. And I can get a new one or I can get a refund. And I just really like their customer service model.
Yes, I do too. And on the other side of their business, if you look at the back end of their business that the customer doesn't see, they have a reputation for being very, very strict with their suppliers. So the people that they buy their products from, they're very, very strict with their quality control and with the pricing and so forth, so that they be sure that the customer gets the best of both.
I enjoy that. Yeah. So anyway, I mean, Costco is not a, you know, endorser, sponsor, you know, of our conversations.
No, of course
right?
not.
And, but it's good to say something nice about a company that you like doing business with.
Well, you know, one thing that I learned this week is that, you know, how we're always complaining about drunk drivers on the road and what a hazard they are. And we've really been cracking down on those in the United States for some years now. Well, now the new thing is that we are seeing a huge increase in not drunk drivers, but drug driving.
Right. Impaired drivers that are using a variety
exactly.
of types of drugs. And, you know, look at the states, California, Colorado. I think there are something like 10 or 12 states in the United States that have legalized marijuana, even though it's a federal offense. You know, to possess it, but they've already seen significant increases in their, you know, driving while impaired under the influence of drugs, arrests and fatality accidents.
And those fatality accidents in 2016 were up 44%.
See, that's just
that's
amazing.
Huge. That's a huge
yeah.
number.
And of course, we know, mm-hmm. I didn't mean to interrupt you, sweetheart, but you know, we know, and of course, it's well publicized around the United States that we have a huge drug epidemic involving opioids, right? And things like OxyContin, and of course, the synthetics, the fentanyl, and things like this. It is killing hundreds of Americans every
thousands
single
of
month.
America.
Well,
yeah.
every single month
right.
and thousands a year.
Sure.
Right.
Sure. And the problem with the drug driving instead of drunk driving is that we don't test for it the same way. So a lot of these get by because they're not being tested for. And it could be things like marijuana, and it could be things like opiates. It could be what any number of different drugs, as you say, but we're not testing for it. So we really don't even know the extent of the problem. But it is a problem, and it's getting to be a worse problem. And just to show you how big of a problem it is, you were telling me about a study that they just did up near Seattle.
Oh, that's just incredible. So they do this water-based study, and they find out that there is a significant percentage of OxyContin in the water because they have been pulling mussels out of the ground,
mm-hmm.
and they have been, you know, they've been testing these mussels for, you know, trace elements, and they're finding, of all things, OxyContin in the systems of these mollusks.
Right.
Okay. And you know, I mean, you could look at that a bunch of different ways, right? You know, I would tend to think that it's coming from the filtration systems of the wastewater that ends up eventually in the ocean, right? And, you know, people flushing prescription medications, you know, down their toilets, you know, down their sinks. I think there was some peer-reviewed research that was just this past year that said that one out of every five Americans are taking some sort of prescription medication. That's huge. And I think what's happening is it's beginning to get out in the water, and of course, it's affecting the food that we eat.
Well, it is. And what they did is they took mussels that had no, they were tested before they were put out, and they were put in these cages in the ocean.
Oh, I've seen that many times. Yeah, aqua farming. Sure.
So they tested them to make sure that they were completely clean.
Sure.
And then they tested them again, I forget how many months later, it was maybe 8 months later. And lo and behold, they come up with all of the drugs in their system, which tells you that the drugs are getting past any type of cleaning system, and they do. The systems that filter our water, they don't filter out a lot of these types of drugs.
Well, that's interesting to know. And you know, you just brought up something that kind of brings me back to my biology, zoology days, and that is that mollusks are filterers.
Yes, right? They are filterers.
And
yes.
So I'm sure that's probably why they used, you know, that species.
Sure, they're filter feeders.
Because and exactly right. Yeah. So, but boy, that's kind of scary.
It is scary because we're talking about out in the ocean. So if that opiate residue is out in the ocean, it's not just those mollusks that are getting the effects of it. It's going to be every creature that is in the ocean and the creatures that eat those mollusks and so forth. So I'm not sure what we're doing to our food chain here, but we seem to have a much bigger drug problem in this country than I ever thought we had.
Well, you know, and that's so sad because, you know, we have friends that live up in that area, up in the Puget Sound and everything, and they're always talking about how beautiful it is. And you had a business trip up in Seattle about a year ago, and I mean, I haven't been up there for years, but you said it was absolutely gorgeous up there.
Well, I enjoyed it very much. I don't want to live there, but I did enjoy the visit very much.
A little too rainy. A little too rainy for me.
A little too rainy. It's, yeah, they do too many crazy political things up there for me. But still, it is a very beautiful area, and I enjoyed the trip very much. In fact, I'd like to go up there again. But
I'd like to go with you this time. If I can carry your luggage, I'd like to.
But I'm not going in the ocean because because of the opiates in the ocean. Well, and I saw another interesting thing because who moved us to Texas? What van lines was it?
Oh, United Van Lines.
United Van Lines.
And let's not give them a plug, for God's sakes. That was the worst move we've ever had. We do a whole show on United Van Lines. What a ripoff that was.
It was not a good move, and they did not handle the aftermath well, and they still haven't today, a year later.
Now we're still dealing with them.
But United Van Lines does keep records of who moves where in the country. So when they move people, they give them a survey and they ask them, you know, why are you moving? Just out of curiosity, you know, so they kind of keep these tallies. It was kind of interesting because I saw the results of this for 2017, and it's not what I would have thought.
But what do you mean by that?
Well, so let's talk about the top 10 states that people are moving out of.
Okay, moving out, escaping. Right. Okay.
They're not the ones I would have thought, but never.
Well, I would have figured California for sure, well, because that's our.
Maybe it'll be in the list and maybe it won't. Let's see. So,
okay, go
number
ahead.
10 is Wisconsin.
Well, you know, I've been spending time this year up in Wisconsin. All right. I love the people up in Wisconsin, but I will tell you, I wouldn't live there. It is so darn cold up there.
It's very cold.
And you came with me.
Yes.
I was giving a speech in Green Bay, remember? For the Law Enforcement Officers Association up there. And they brought us up in February. And, oh, my God, I don't think I've ever been that cold in my whole life. I don't know how those people play football. I don't know how those people live up there.
I think if you're raised that way, then your body adjusts to it. But we were not adjusted to it.
Well, I know they do a lot of drinking up there.
Well, then Number nine is Utah, which surprised me that people are moving out of Utah.
Because, well, you know, oh, that's interesting. I just had a friend move up to Utah.
Well, and people do move. It, all they're saying is that more people are moving out than in to these states.
Okay.
Okay, so then number eight is Kentucky.
All right. Can't talk about Kentucky. I don't know anything about it.
Yeah, I've never been there. Number seven is Ohio, which I'm kind of surprised about because that's always a place. Well, you know what? In my whole life, it's been a place that people are from is Ohio. They're from Ohio, but they live somewhere else.
You know, I like some areas of Ohio. You know, I do some work, as you know, in Cleveland mm-hmm. and in Columbus and in Cincinnati. And again, that's another place where the people are extremely nice. And, you know, Fox sent me up there for the convention, right? And I was in Cleveland. And I had a great time up there. I will tell you one thing. Cleveland's got some great things to see for tourists, and they've got great restaurants and pubs there.
And very nice people there.
Very nice people there.
So the next one is Massachusetts.
Well, I'm not a fan. So.
Yeah, people are leaving Massachusetts. And number five is Kansas. So I'm not sure about that one because, again, I've never been to Kansas. So these are places I would love to see. Connecticut is another.
Well, you know, you mentioned Massachusetts. You mentioned Connecticut now. I would think, based on what I've read and seen on television and everything, the taxes are so high in those states, right, that maybe that has something to do with it.
And I don't know if the weather might have something to do with it or not because it doesn't really give the reasons why people are moving out of these states. But and then these I would expect. So three and two are New York and New Jersey.
Oh, sure.
And I know that there's an exodus from both of those, mainly because of the high cost of living and the taxes there.
That's exactly right.
And we've seen that across the country with people that we've spoken to that are leaving New York.
And, you know, they tend to go down to Florida. You know, that's been an age-old exodus out of especially New York. You know, you find so many people. You know, when we go down to Florida, look at all the people that we run into from Florida, and they all have New York accents. I can't even understand them sometimes.
Well, and the number one state that people are leaving is Illinois.
Oh, wow. Okay. Well, that's interesting.
Well, I mean, that makes sense to me. It makes sense to me. Politically, it makes sense to me that it's been a dangerous place to be in a lot of the city areas.
Yes.
So I'm not sure all of their reasons, but Illinois is number one.
But, you know, I have to tell you, you know, we're talking about these states and the, you know, who's coming in, who's going out and everything like that. But unless the research, you know, asks and have answers to the probative questions as to why are you leaving the state, you know, it doesn't really mean all that much to me.
Well, and it may not. No, I don't know that. I don't know what the survey says. In fact, I don't remember filling that out myself, to be honest with you. But I must have. But whatever. It's just an interesting. I know that people are. There definitely are states that people are moving out of. I would have thought that number one would have been California. I was very surprised not to see that on the list because I know that so many people are leaving California. So I'm not really, and even United Van Lines told us that they were moving tons of people out and not a lot of people in. But the one thing with California that I did read is that it's one of the states that people are coming to for a job offer. So that maybe that. Well, you know, I don't really know.
Well, you know, what I saw in some of that research is that those people that are coming into California are younger and they only plan to stay for just 3 or 4 years and then they plan to move out of California. They want to make their bones. They want to make a, you know, good living. A lot of these are tech jobs, right? A lot of these are Silicon Valley type jobs. And then they want to make that money and they want to move right back out of the state of California again because of the reasons that you and I escaped. And, you know, remember when we escaped California, we went to Texas, we went to the Department of Motor Vehicles to get our driver's license. You remember what the lady said to us when we were there?
She said that there's tons of Californians coming in there.
Oh, she said, oh, you're from California. Mm-hmm. And I'm going, oh, well, here it comes. Here it comes. She goes, oh, no, welcome to Texas. We are inundated by people coming to Texas from California. Mm-hmm. So I think that there's, you know, more research out there that might show some different trends than this. But it's nice to know.
Yeah. And the states that people are going to...
I'm interested. Go ahead.
Okay. Number 10 is Alabama.
Drum roll.
Alabama, number 10. Colorado, number 9. And we have friends that have just moved there and absolutely love it. North Carolina and South Carolina. My brother just moved.
And two
and
of my...
loves it.
Two of my dear friends moved to North Carolina.
Right. Washington, the state of Washington, which is a beautiful state to go to. South Dakota, which I've never been to, and I'm not sure why they're moving there, but I would be interested to know. Nevada, we know. Nevada is just really getting a huge influx of people.
And tons of people from California that are friends of us, guys that I used to work with.
Lots of them.
A lot of those guys, we have coffee and drinks with those guys.
Right. And number 3 is Idaho.
Okay.
Yeah, which is, you know, Idaho's been in a state for a while. Sure.
Our dear friend Marty moved up to Idaho last year.
Right. And number 2, Oregon. So, again, we have good friends that moved to Oregon.
Our contractor moved up to Oregon.
And number 1 is Vermont, which is interesting because Vermont is such a little bitty state.
Yeah, but it is absolutely a gorgeous state.
It is beautiful.
Yeah, I'd love to go there in the fall and watch the change in the seasons.
Yeah. So I thought that that was really interesting. And for us, we left California and went to Texas. We know lots of people doing the same thing. We couldn't be happier there. But, you know, everybody has their own place to go.
You got to do your own thing.
Tired of watching the same old sporting events? Well, kick it up a notch and get ready, America, for something you've never seen before. It's the new generation of Western superstars. Shorty Gorham's American freestyle bullfighting. Who will win? The acrobatic, tough-as-nails Western superstar or the meanest half-ton fighting bulls on Earth? This is one of the most extreme sports you'll ever see in an arena. This is hand-to-horn combat on a level playing field. Go to ShortyGorhamAFB.com or find them on Facebook. It's bullfighting time.
This is Dr. Ron Martinelli, forensic criminologist and host of A Thread of Evidence on America Out Loud. If you'd like to find out what forensic criminologists really do in the field, and you're tired of the false narratives about law enforcement and want to unpack the cases that I've worked throughout the nation, then please pick up a copy of my new book, The Truth Behind the Black Lives Matter Movement and the War on Police, on sale right now at Amazon.com. That's The Truth Behind the Black Lives Matter Movement and the War on Police at Amazon.com.
Okay, got your coffee settled in?
Yeah, I'm good. Thanks very much. You know, I'm feeling a little bit tired, so the coffee is going to just kind of keep me awake a little bit more. So thank you so much.
You're welcome. Sounds like you're saying I was boring you. I don't know.
No, you're not boring me, Jiminy. I'm just, you know, we worked so darn hard today, and I'm just like brain dead.
Speaking of California, in Huntington Beach, there's a couple that I learned of that are a mixed marriage. So the husband is a black man and the woman is a white woman. This couple has been married for 50 years. So they actually got married at about the very time that the courts allowed blacks and whites to get married 50 years ago.
Which kind of shows you how far we've come.
And how
repressed we were.
They were the interracial marriages were by no means a normal thing back in that day.
Right.
And they actually suffered some issues with this because when they got married, they moved to a neighborhood and then they got a phone call that their house was on fire. It was never said to be
an arson,
but it was an arson. Okay. You know, I mean, that was just that day and age, it seems like. Well, this couple has stuck together. And by the way, they just are the cutest, happiest couple if you look at their pictures.
Oh, what's their names?
Their names are, I will tell you their names. Their names are Charles and Janice Tyler, and they now live in Huntington Beach, California. And they just have the biggest smiles on their face, and they're very cute. So they have 4 children and 11 grandchildren. And they really credit their marriage, their long marriage, to, you know, just being happy with each other, understanding each other, communicating, all the things that we all think are the things that are bedrocks of a good marriage.
Well, you know, those are the things that I enjoy about our marriage.
Well, as do I, and thank you for saying that.
No, no sweat.
But they had a harder road, certainly, back in that time, you know, with their interracial marriage. But I just really want to say, their opinion now is that their life is very normal. They don't have the feeling of being different anymore. They're very well accepted in their community and wherever they go. So the reason that I bring this up, Ron, besides just them being a very cool couple, is it goes back to my belief, and I think your belief too, as we travel around the country, we do not see this whole racism problem that is seen by the media and by some politicians that they keep throwing in our face that we are all racist. And what was said on television in the last couple of days on CNN specifically was that anybody who supports President Trump is by definition a racist. And I just, again, I know I say this all the time, I resent it so much. I think it's absolutely disgusting that we get labeled this way when those same people are labeling everybody else. You know,
and I know that frosts your socks, okay? And we've talked about this on, you know, several occasions. Just because we're kind of fortunate. You know, we get to travel all around the country and all around the world, as a matter of fact. And with us, it's all about the relationships and people, and we're just so used to seeing people getting along. We certainly understand because we grew up in that era, okay? Mm-hmm. We are as old as them, all right? And we grew up through
that. Not quite.
Well, they're maybe a little bit older. They're a little bit older than us. But you know what I'm saying. We grew up in that generation where there was, you know, racism, okay? Where there was bias and where there were problems. And we grew up during the civil rights time. So we certainly, you know that. But, you know, we also know how far as a nation and as a people we've come. And the thing that bothers me is when we do get people on the left that, you know, want to stir the pot and put so much more there than there is. You know, they just resonate with the idea that everything is racism. You know, they see things through the prism of race instead of the prism of people.
Yes. And it was what Hillary did through her whole campaign with all of her words that she constantly called everybody. And now that Chelsea Clinton is doing exactly using the same words.
And we had that conversation about her.
That the media uses using the same words. But it's only the Republican side or the conservative side that is labeled this way. So I guess that if you're a Democrat, as we've proven in these last few days by the people in the media and on television that are saying terrible things about other people who are not losing their jobs like Roseanne Barr did, not that she shouldn't have, but certainly these people should also. But it's okay for one side to be that way and not okay for the other side, which brings me to the Starbucks issue.
Well, you know, let me pick up on what you just said, sweetheart. And, you know, of course, I'd love it if you want to get into a discussion again about Starbucks because there's so much to say. But with me, I don't like the tit for tat. I don't like that. I believe that we are all Americans or should be all Americans at heart, and we should be proud of our nation, proud of where we've come from, proud of the accomplishments, and then let's be proud of the new accomplishments that we're having under our new president. Let's give this guy some support. Let's give his administration some support. Let's drain this swamp. Let's stop the labeling. Let's stop the resistance. Let's stop the obstruction. And let's move on as a people. Now, regarding Starbucks, okay, so they recently had their training. Okay, so they closed down 8,000 Starbucks cafes, and they did the training, all right? And we talked a little bit about this, but now there's some stuff that has come out by the people who took the training.
Right.
And of course, you do corporate training, right? I've done a little bit corporate training, nothing near like yours, but I'm a, you know, me, my thing is law enforcement, right? So I've done a tremendous amount of law enforcement training, but training is training, okay? And so, you know, this was training in regards to problems that they had with policies. I mean, that's how it started, okay? The whole Philadelphia incident with the two black gentlemen that were inside the Starbucks that they wouldn't let them use the bathroom, and they wanted them out, and they called the police because they wouldn't leave. And, you know, this is how this whole, and it just blew up in their face. And so they did all this training. And I'll tell you the truth, from what I'm seeing, the training was a total flop.
Well, from what I'm seeing, the training wasn't anything about that issue whatsoever.
Right. And that's a problem.
Right. And from what I'm seeing is that it was about, now they're going to be called your third, what is it? Your
it's the third place.
Yeah.
Okay, but so, I get that. Well, I get the third place.
Well,
thing.
You know what? I don't get it.
Uh-oh, we're going to disagree. Okay.
I mean, I get what they're saying, but I think it's silly. I'm sorry. The third place is you have your home, your work, and your Starbucks. Starbucks is your third place. Well, you know, I'm with you with the opinion that I just go there to get a cup of coffee. Just give me a cup of coffee. That's what I want.
You're singing my song.
Yeah. I don't need anybody's politics there. I don't need them to be racially sensitive or insensitive or anything else. Just pour me my cup of coffee. Get my order right, I will pay you and be on my way. That's all that I want. And we've made this such, it's like its own country within our country anymore, this whole Starbucks thing. And by the way, as you know, I like Starbucks coffee. I like a lot of people's coffee. And there's other companies that I don't like their coffee. That's neither here nor there. I don't go there for anything but getting a cup of coffee. And when I see that this company is making political statements all the time that really go against what's in my heart politically, I don't want to go there anymore. So why do they want to do that to their company and to people like me who are 50% at least of this country?
Well, you know, Howard Schultz is the CEO. I mentioned in our last discussion about Starbucks, my dislike for Mr. Schultz, okay? He's way out there in left field, and he wants to impose their value system on us, and I am just like you. Hey, look, I could go in there and do that training in a half an hour, all right? Here's the training. We're the customer. You are the server. I don't care about your value system. Don't introduce your value system into my cup of coffee. I'm just there for a cup of coffee. Look, here's the relationship. Okay, let's keep it real simple. The relationship is I overpay you for coffee. Okay, I come in for a cup of coffee. I might use the internet. I want to get my cup of coffee. I'll pay the toll for the internet and I'm gone. That is the relationship. I'm not interested in your politics. I'm interested in a good cup of coffee and maybe a Danish. All right. That's where it goes. That's where it ends. I understand that you have to have some policies. You obviously need policies, especially those places that are in urban areas. But train your staff to policies and don't write stupid, demeaning, offensive things on my coffee cup. If I'm a police officer, let me go to the bathroom. If I'm a police officer, I'm going to drink your damn coffee. All right. But that's the end of it. Don't you agree?
Well, I do. And what's interesting about their new policies and their training. So their new policy now is that any customer is welcome to use Starbucks spaces, including the restrooms, cafes, and patios, regardless of whether they make a purchase. However, they're kind of walking that back already.
Oh, do you think?
I don't think it's been a week or two since this training, and they're starting to walk it back. Because
it hasn't even been a week.
What the policy is that they have to use the spaces as intended. They have to be considerate of others, communicate with respect, act responsibly. On occasion, The circumstances of a customer's disruptive behavior may make it necessary to prohibit that customer from returning to our store. So they still have a policy. Everybody has to have a policy. I don't disagree with it, but let's just call it what it is. If you are some creep in the store and you're doing something wrong, or you're using the restroom to take a sponge bath in the sink or something.
Or shooting up some dope.
Right. Or molesting children. Or
having
whatever
an act
you're doing.
Of prostitution.
Yeah, you cannot be there. And let's call it what it is. But what they've done here, Ron, is they've made it about color. It has nothing to do with color, but they've made it now that their new policy, and in their employee manual, it says that they're color brave. Okay, not color blind. They're color brave. I don't need anybody to be color brave. Do you know why? Because I don't see them that way. If you're going to serve me a cup of coffee, or if you're standing in line with me, I don't care if you're black, green, purple, brown. I don't care. I just am there for my coffee. I have no feelings one way or the other about you as a person, other than that you're another person just like me.
You know, I saw the racial sensitivity training they were doing, and I thought it was just idiotic, and I thought it was condescending. All right, and for that same reason, look, here it is, just the good rule. Treat others like you'd like to be treated. Use some damn common sense with all of your customers. Show them respect, all right? And just give me my cup of coffee. An end of relationship.
But they are telling these people that work there that institutional racism permeates society. Right. And what they have said that has really frosted my socks is this. Exactly this. The ways in which institutional policies and practices create different outcomes for different racial groups, creating unbalanced advantages for whites, along with oppression and disadvantages for people from groups classified as non-white. They're singing that same political song that the media and the politicians are singing, and I resent it. And therefore, as a solid Starbucks customer, I cannot go there because of what they're saying. They're saying that because I'm white, I'm racist.
Well, you know, what they're doing is exacerbating the problem that started this all from the beginning. They are introducing their value system into my coffee, okay? Into my coffee experience. That's what they're doing,
right?
Okay? And that's what got them into trouble in the first place. The other thing is they need to know their demographic of who their customers are and who their servers are. Okay, so you got a lot of young people at Starbucks that are baristas, and they don't have a lot of life experience. Therefore, they have no context about life. Their interpersonal relationships are immature, and they can't string the dots together. All right, look, we're just there for a cup of coffee. I don't care if you got a nose ring. I don't care if you're inked up. I don't care what color you are. I don't care what color or culture you come from. I just want my damn coffee.
Right.
Just give me my coffee. Treat me with respect. I'm going to pay you for it. And that's the end of the relationship. Can you get that?
You can pay me because I'm making you the coffee.
Well, yeah, I'm going to get another cup of coffee in a couple of minutes. But, you know, it bothers me because here they are on their soapbox, you know, talking down not only to their people, but they're making everybody else out there look bad, okay?
And didn't I hear that they were showing videos about police brutality?
Oh, absolutely. Don't even start me. How the police got into this, I have no idea. You called the police in Philadelphia. They tried to do what you asked them to do. Okay, and they tried to de-escalate. They did a good job. You know, they had to arrest them because you caused that situation.
Right.
So what do you expect from the police? If I'm there listening to that training, I don't want to see any of these videos of police brutality when we had nothing to do with your corporate culture. That, in my estimation, totally sucks.
And in fact, I'm wondering how many times police have done something that has helped a Starbucks store from somebody that was robbing it or causing a problem or a disturbance. But we don't want to talk about that. We only want to talk about something completely off the wall that has nothing to do with
this. Let me tell you what.
I'm very frustrated with them. and I can't support it.
Well, that's good. And I'm not going to support it either. Hell, I'll go to McDonald's. I'll go to 7-Eleven if I need a cup of coffee.
I'll make my own coffee.
but you know, you're exactly right. So, you know, all right. So much for Starbucks. Hey, you know what? Get your money back, all right, from that training. Horrible training.
Yeah, whoever did the training was really bad.
Absolutely.
They had an agenda, and the agenda was not for the customer, because the entire training should have been about the customer experience in your store. Because I got to tell you, as much as I have loved going to Starbucks, at least 4 out of 10 times, I get the wrong order.
Well, you know, and I'll... And I know you do, because I'm usually in the car with you when you're swearing. But, you know, I will say one last thing. A lot of the criticisms about the training came from their own baristas. And what the baristas are saying was, number one, all this training had nothing to do with the systemic problems that we face as baristas in Starbucks, and nobody asked us our opinion. How can you train your staff if you don't allow for input so you can test them for context, so you can test them to make sure they understood what you were trying to train them in, and to make sure that they're going to move forward in carrying out company policy? How do you do that without including your staff?
It was a political brainwash seminar. Is all it was, and it was done for looks and nothing else, and they lost $12 million by doing it. So good for them.
How'd that work out for you?
The goal is to deliver a message of truth, inspiration, and hope to the world, to unite people from all backgrounds and beliefs in an effort to advance humanity. News blogs, informative podcasts, and entertaining videos. It's AmericaOutloud.com. where the conversation never ends, with 24/7 streaming on our free apps on both Android and Apple. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
Hey, thanks for the refill.
You're welcome.
So, let me get in touch with you here for a second, all right?
Okay.
You know, your show, Life, Liberty, and the Pursuit of Pleasure, just concluded after 100 shows. And how do you feel about that? Is that kind of bittersweet? Or how do you... That, by the way, what a remarkable show. I enjoyed it, okay? If you get a guy that can listen to that show, you know, you've done a great job.
It is kind of bittersweet. It was a very interesting journey for me, a very interesting personal journey for me on that show. And, you know, just for you to remember how this all started, you know, I started writing for America Out Loud and really enjoy the writing very much. I didn't think I would be very good at it, and it just really is home to me. So I really love that. And Malcolm asked me if I would be willing to do Life, Liberty. I didn't know the first thing about it over a year ago. And so I talked to you about it, and we had a conversation, and you encouraged me to go ahead and do the show. And I was very, very nervous about it. But
I think sometimes I know you better than you know yourself.
But I did accept the offer to do the show. And that first day that I did the first show, which was on Should a Woman Be President and How Soon, you know, I was very nervous. And in fact, I did that show from this very RV that we're sitting in now, because we were on the road somewhere. And, you know, it was nerve-wracking for me. But every day after that, it got easier and better. And I found a comfort there. And I'll tell you what, the 9 other ladies on that show were absolutely everything that you would expect them to be. They're intelligent, they're educated, they're diverse, they're from every walk of life, they're from every they're every color, they're every
culture.
Culture.
You had this was an international group of women, right?
Yes.
They weren't just from the United States.
Correct.
They were some in like England and places
Costa
like
Rica,
that.
Costa England, Rica, England,
yeah.
Canada. Yeah, the ladies were just amazing. And the thing also that was interesting was there were 7 more liberal ladies, and there was three more conservative, me being, of course, one of the conservatives. And I really thought that we were going to have some knockdown, drag-out fights when I very first, you know, started talking about this show. And it never, ever became that. We have so much respect for one another. It was a whole life lesson for me in how people can communicate who have different political views, who have different life scenarios, who are from different cultures, from different places, different colors, different sexual orientations, all these different things, yet we were all friends and respectful of one another every minute of every conversation.
And, you know, I think Malcolm was the glue that bonded you all together. And he's a little bit of a provocateur, too.
He certainly is.
Malcolm loves to stir the pot, you know.
Yes, he does. But, you know, what else? Here's what Malcolm has that is a most wonderful gift that is so rare in the world today, Ron. Malcolm has the gift of making somebody feel like they can do things, like they can spread their wings and fly, whether they can or not.
Yeah.
He gives you that gift, and that gift allows you the opportunity to spread your wings and fly. And that's what Malcolm gave to me, along with all the ladies on the show, just with their intelligence and their, you know, just giving to each other on there and remaining respectful no matter if it was a subject that we disagreed on. So I learned a lot from that show, and what I have taken away from that show that is so valuable to me is a life lesson for everybody in this country, especially, who is so vitriolic and so mean and so nasty about politics, that here we were, people of all these different races, religions, you name it. We were all different from different places, different political bents, yet we were all respectful. Why can our politicians not do that? And what it tells me is that they can if they choose to.
No, I just don't think they want to. But anyway, I just wanted to congratulate you. I mean, 100 shows, my God, that's one heck of an accomplishment. And personally, I saw you grow during the show. I knew you could do it. That's why I kind of, you know, edged you into it, you know, and you took up the challenge, and like I knew you would, and you just did a great job. So thank you for your service.
Yeah, well, you know what? I loved it. I will miss it. But actually, I'm not gone from it. The ladies are going on to bigger and better things, and we'll be discussing that soon.
Well, fantastic. Well, okay, so I've got some fun news. And actually, it's a good news story. And it takes place in Hillsboro, Oregon. And with an 18-year-old senior in high school by the name of Adrian Barnes. So Adrian Barnes comes to school one day, and he's wearing a Donald Trump T-shirt.
Oh, no.
Okay. And the T-shirt says, I love it, the T-shirt says Donald J. Trump Border Wall Construction Company. All right. So he's wearing his T-shirt. He goes into one of his classes, and one of his teachers, he turns him into the principal, and the teacher says, well, I'm offended by this T-shirt. So the kid gets called down to the principal's office, and they give him an ultimatum of, okay, cover up, take off the shirt or cover it up or face a suspension. So initially, he covers up the shirt and he goes back to class. But while he's in class, he's starting to think, hey, wait a minute, you know, there is a Bill of Rights. The First Amendment protects me in my freedom of speech, right? And so knowing that, it just kind of gave him a little bit more confidence, and he took the jacket off that he had over his shirt and was wearing it again. And of course, what do you think happened? He got called right back down to the principal's office. So the principal suspends his kid for 10 days, okay, for creating a hostile education environment. Now, mind you, the only person that said anything about the T-shirt was a teacher. And the kid pointed out to the principal that, hey, wait a minute, I'm in such and such a class, and for the entire year, the female teacher in that classroom has had a sanctuary state banner or poster hanging up in her classroom, and so you let her have that, but you don't. I mean, I find that offensive, right? He said, right?
Yeah.
So anyway, so the principal wouldn't back down, gave him 10 days suspension. So what do you think Adrian Barnes did?
Well, hopefully he sued somebody.
You're darn right. And you know who got in his corner? Was the ACLU, the American Civil Liberties Union.
Good for
and
them.
They said, yeah, this was a mistake. The school was discriminating against him. It was a violation of his First Amendment, his constitutional rights. And the case went to federal court, and the federal judge agreed with Barnes and so issued a restraining order against the high school for First Amendment freedom of speech violations. Now, here's the kicker. What do you think the name of the high school is in Hillsboro, Oregon, that Adrian Barnes attends?
I do not know.
Liberty High School.
Oh, well, of course that's what it is. We've taken this whole thing way too far in our schools. Everything has a political bent, doesn't it?
Oh, God, it
does.
Well,
speaking of schools and political bent.
Uh-oh, you've got one.
Well, we're back to our Parkland activist boy, David Hogue.
Oh, God, I can't stand that guy.
Is it Hogue or Hogue? I'm not exactly sure.
I think it's Hogue.
But anyway, as you know, he had the little die-in, which I think he's planning another one somewhere. But he did the little die-in
at Public Supermarket.
At Public Supermarket.
Right?
Now, Public Supermarket had donated lots and lots of money to the NRA, but Public Supermarket also donated $760,000 to Democratic
groups and more liberal groups.
And that's since 2012. So they've been kind of even Steven and donating to both sides.
Right, and I think that's what I saw their CEO came out with a statement, said, hey, wait a minute, we try to make it, you know, sort of 50-50 between conservative and more liberal causes and groups, and we're sort of an equal opportunity donator.
Right, And the things that he set out to stop and destroy that day that he did that only got better for those people. So the NRA got thousands and thousands of new members.
Okay.
And the political person that he wanted to boycott Putnam, he's now in a much better position politically. So everything that he set out to do did the opposite.
And then did Publix stop donating to everybody?
They stopped donating to everybody. So everybody lost based on this kid who, at his young age, thinks he's really smart, but he's not really smart.
But I found also because of that, what also backfired on him is when people read about what happened and heard about it on television or whatever, they donated a lot more money to the NRA. So the NRA ended up getting a far bigger membership,
yes,
a lot more donations, and the liberal groups that Publix had previously donated to went to zero. And
yes,
that's unfortunate.
And when he tried to boycott Laura Ingraham's show, her ratings went up 20%.
So that's not working
out
for him.
No, it's not working out for him. So anyway, that was just my school story for the day. It's not really good news or bad news. It's just news.
Well, can I give you a hero of the day?
Absolutely.
My hero of the day? Well, my hero of the day is Darren Phillips. And Darren Phillips is a trucker. And he's driving down Interstate 80 near Green River, Wyoming, when he sees a squad car pulled over, state trooper car pulled over with another car, and as he slows down to watch, he sees that a trooper is in a battle for his life, and it's a ground fight, and the motorist is on top of him and pummeling him and grabbing his gun.
Oh, dear.
So Darren jumps out of his truck and runs up to the melee and grabs this guy and subdues him and saves this trooper's life, okay? So after this guy, the assailant, is hooked up and thrown in the back of the squad car, they search the guy's car, and he's got 74 pounds of marijuana and cocaine in the car.
Wow.
So, you know, a little bit about Darren Phillips. 12 years, United States Marine Corps, Semper Fi, Darren, and 14 years in United States National Guard. And every single day, we have heroes in America.
We do, and they're unsung. So I'm all about singing for them. And here's, you know, it's funny that we're so on the same page today, because now I have a car accident story.
Oh, go ahead.
And another set of heroes. But my heroes is a bunch of heroes. There was a youth football team that was from Boise, Idaho, and they were returning from a tournament in California. And they were, their team is called the Black Knights, okay? And they saw an SUV flip over in front of them.
Oh.
And in the vehicle was a husband and wife by the name of Alan and Maggie Hartman. And Mr. Hartman was able to crawl out of the vehicle, but Mrs. Hartman was not.
Ooh.
And she was stuck in her seatbelt, and she was stuck upside down in the car.
Okay.
These young men, by the way, who were all 13 years old or younger.
Oh, this is a kind of a junior league crew of guys, right? Okay.
Yes. They cut the seatbelt free, which is heads-up thinking for young people like that. And the boys all got together as a team and flipped that car to get her out.
Wow, that's amazing.
And you could never have done that without all of those. They literally lifted that SUV off the ground and pulled her out.
That's a wonderful gesture.
So that team of Black Knights is, I mean, they're really, really great heroes.
Well, God bless them all.
And do we have time to do you have, are you done with your coffee? Can I do one more?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm listening to you.
This is a really moving story to me. There's a young man, Kevin Chandler. He's 32 years old, and he lives in Fort Wayne, Indiana. And he has two roommates, and he loves to travel. Well, this young man was born with spinal muscular atrophy, SMA, a genetic disease which affects the parts of the nervous system that controls voluntary muscle movement.
Now, I'm familiar with it.
He has never walked a day in his life.
Okay.
Okay, and as he gets older, continues to get weaker. He
right.
actually has a sister that has the same condition as well. So Kevin cannot walk. But he lives in an apartment with two buddies, and he loves to travel. And his buddies love to travel. So what his buddies have done is they have made kind of like how you carry a baby on a backpack.
Yes.
On your back.
Yeah.
They have made that type of contraption for Kevin to be in. And they have taken this young man to all kinds of places in the world and taken him just everywhere with them.
In a backpack?
Well, it's not really a backpack. It's kind of like a carry pack for a person on their back. And they have gotten to go just through Europe. They've gone through Europe. He's gone through tunnels and caves and up bridges and all these things with these guys carrying him everywhere that they go. He gets to have the whole travel experience with his friends.
What a selfless act for these guys.
Yes.
Okay. I mean, that's absolutely amazing. And it just kind of reinforces how strong the human spirit is and how kind people can be with each other when they want to be.
He says that the world is accessible if we're willing to get creative with it, that with his mindset, anything is possible. And, of course, with friends like that, too. So this summer, they're going to China.
Oh, neat. Go see the wall. Go see it. Tiananmen Square. Go see everything.
He said he's up for anything, and he doesn't know what to expect. He's going in with an open mind, and he's excited for adventures.
Well, I'll tell you what. That's a wonderful story, and let's continue our adventure tomorrow after we clean up these coffee cups and hit the sack. The dog's already ahead of us.
Okay.
I love you.
Love you, too.